This is Apologetics Profile, a podcast from Watchman Fellowship, giving you the tools to defend your faith with confidence.
Did it say devil?
It just said devil.
Okay, yeah. I got chills.
Oh.
Happy Halloween.
Angel, that was her nickname.
All righty, we're out here on the property in Midlothian. We're gonna do some ghost hunting. Are y'all ready?
Sure. Bring it.
If you're here, can you make a thump for us? Okay.
No, I'm not doing this.
So I was trying to push it over to no, because we asked, is it in the house? And I was like, I'm just going to push it towards no. I don't want it to be in my house. And I couldn't. Like, it was physically forcing my hand this way, because I was trying to push it. I was like, I'm just going to push it towards no, and I couldn't do it.
The audio clips you just heard at the beginning of the broadcast were taken from popular YouTube videos of people interacting with the Ouija board. First widely introduced as a mere novelty to the American public in the early 1890s, it remains one of the most popular board games ever created, and yet it is anything but a board game, as testimonies and stories abound of fear, terror, evil, bodily demonic possession, and even death coming about as a result of interacting with it. In the late 19th century, entrepreneur William Fold brought the board into mainstream popularity, even advertising it in the Sears catalog. Quote, Ouija, the magic game. Remarkable, interesting, mystifying game. Great mirth-making game for parties, apparently answering questions concerning past, present, and future, end quote. And in general, this is still the prevailing attitude of many people who try it out for the first time. Curious, they think it to be just a fun and exciting party activity. Which it is not. The board once told Fold, for example, to expect to make a fortune and to build a new factory to make the board, which he did. One day, Fold paid a visit to the building as it was being constructed. The story goes that he was standing on the roof, holding on to an iron pole, when he suddenly lost his grip and fell backwards to the ground three stories below. He survived the fall, but with several broken ribs, one of which pierced his heart on the way to the hospital, where he eventually died of his injuries. There is nothing novel about the Ouija board, as it has its origins in the ancient practice of necromancy, of channeling spirits and communicating with the dead, things strictly forbidden by scripture. The Ouija board is nothing but a wide-open door to the occult and the realm of the demonic. The individual you heard at the beginning of the episode who said Happy Halloween was, for example, in his kitchen, alone, trying out the Ouija board, when the spirit with whom he was communicating suddenly broke a glass and then proceeded to throw pots and pans and other kitchen utensils all about the room. At one point, you can hear the individual say, quote, the power of Christ compels you, end quote. The individual appeared genuinely afraid and seemed to intuitively know to invoke the name of Christ for help. First Peter 5:8 says, quote, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, end quote. Of course, in context, Peter is speaking to those suffering for their witness of Jesus, but the exhortation is also applicable to to occultic practices. We must resist the devil, not giving the adversary a foothold in our lives, for the Lord Jesus has come to destroy the works of the devil, and as believers, we are dedicated to the tearing down and demolishing of strongholds and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. On part one of this two-part episode about the Ouija board, senior apologist Brady Blevins and I discuss the background and history of the board. We're going to talk about something that became very popular amidst another pandemic 100 years ago. Right in the midst of the Spanish flu, our topic this afternoon is going to be the Ouija board, which took off right in the midst of the end of World War I and the beginning of the outbreak of the Spanish flu, right in 1920s. That's when really it became sort of in the mainstream. I mean, it was developed in 1890, 1891, but this really became a toy in 1920, right in the midst of the Spanish flu and just after the World War I. But it was patented, created, and put out on the market in 1891. We're talking about the Ouija board. Some fascinating stories behind everything that I just said, Brady, that I'm going to give you the opportunity to unpack. What is the Ouija board, and why are we talking about it?
Yes. Okay. So, out of all the profiles that I've written for Watchmen, this maybe was the most fascinating in that I thought that I knew what I was looking at when I started my research and I started spending hours upon hours trying to learn everything I could about the Ouija board. And then the more I dug in, the more shocked I was to figure out what this is all about. Because like even when you say, okay, this became a really popular toy in the 1920s, its popularity in the United States may have hit around that time or maybe even a little bit earlier, but this is something that's been going on in history for thousands of years. The Ouija board is not it's not even a relatively new invention. It's been around. In fact, we're talking about 540 BC. It's used in the days of Pythagoras. Mm. So the roots of the Ouija board itself is really controversial. There's not a single person or culture that can really make claims to being the ones who invented the Ouija board.
And so leave it up to Americans to sort of Americanize an ancient practice. That's what we do with everything, don't we?
Absolutely. My son and I were talking last night, and he said, isn't it the most American thing is to assume that everyone's from America? And I laughed, and I said, well, yeah, except for the fact that we're a melting pot. So, you know, it's not like we're some cultures where it's a little more identifiable.
That's the genius of our culture, if you want to call it genius, where we can take an old idea and make people believe that it's something newfangled, right?
Exactly.
So we're talking about a very ancient spiritual, if you will, practice of basically communicating with the dead. And yeah, a few clever individuals who were philanthropists, one was a professed Presbyterian, come up with this board game. It really wasn't a board game when it originally was created, but with some investment, you think about it, the end of the Civil War, World War I, and then the flu pandemic, everybody lost a cousin, uncle, brother, husband during those time periods. And so it was immensely popular. I found it fascinating that a coffin maker was making the boards on the side originally. It's like, okay, that says something, doesn't it? And yet people were, pardon the pun, dying to communicate with their lost relatives. And this provided a way to do that, didn't it?
Yeah. I mean, and you know, this goes into the whole issue of the occult. And I know we had a whole podcast on the occult, and I don't want to dredge that entire podcast back up into this one, but the whole when we say occult, and that's O-C-C-U-L-T, we're talking about wanting to gain hidden knowledge or power supernaturally apart from the God of the Bible. And to an extent, I understand. I get it. Because if you've ever lost a loved one, and that's, you know, all of us. I mean, if you live on this earth long enough, you will have lost someone that you really loved and, you know, had a great relationship with, or maybe even not a great relationship, you just really loved them. And how much would we be willing to pay? How much would we be willing to do if we could have just one more conversation? And I think that's where I think, you know, the Ouija board plays a massive role, because this is something you don't have to go to a spooky palm reader's office. You don't have to hire, you know, some kind of a psychic or medium to have a seance in your home or somewhere else. You can actually go to any retail store that sells board games, pick one up, take it home, and have your own communication with the dead right there on your terms, you think, in your house. And so, and the way that it's been marketed, and we'll get to that history in a minute, has caused us as a nation, as a people, to think that this isn't really a big deal. And, of course, we might have the IRS to blame for that, but that's just a peek ahead to what we will talk about.
Yes, yes, that's fascinating. As I was looking into this, preparing for our chat, I found it fascinating to me. There's two things here at work. One is a lot of money and investment, right?
Yes.
Two is some very clever people. Uh-huh. And three is this idea of a tool. Mm-hmm. That gives us, as you say, that gives us, or allegedly gives us, this extended power.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily say that people who indulge in it would say that they're thinking themselves that they're acquiring godlike power. I just want to talk to Aunt Edna. I just want to talk to my wife. I just want to talk to my late son. They don't perceive this as sort of like I'm trying to be godlike. They just think this is a harmless thing. And it was fascinating to me how domesticated this tool and these assumptions, how quickly that took hold, and how, like you say, the domestication of necromancy, I guess you could call it. We're going to reduce it down to this harmless little board game you could buy at Walmart or at any toy store or whatever. And it's that domestication that mindset of, oh, this is harmless. It's a board game. I got it up in the closet with Monopoly and Chutes and Ladders and, you know, everything else. That's an old game. It kind of dates myself. But but this domestication of a very ancient practice that is expressly forbidden by the Bible. We've become accustomed. That's no big deal, right?
Absolutely. And I think that now in some cases, some people may be attempting to get power. But I think for a lot of people, is they just want that knowledge. They want that hidden knowledge. How's my loved one? Are they okay? You know, what was that thing that they wanted to tell me, or I wanted to tell them? And could they hear my message? I mean, when I was at the funeral service, I said something. Could they hear that? And it tugs on the heartstrings of people. And I think that's what really, you know, ties people in to want to go after this. Just think about it. The success of the Ouija board from a strictly business standpoint is astronomical. I get into some of the numbers in the profile that I wrote. I mean, millions of copies, but I mean, when's the last time we saw a commercial for a Ouija board?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that they've never happened, but this is something that you don't have to advertise this thing, because people are naturally going after it, because I think we all have this insatiable appetite to want to know things, period. I mean, we are in the information age, but even more, we want to know the things that are hidden.
Right.
And
right. And what, there's you know, this appetite in our culture for secret knowledge, Brady, because if they think we're on the inside of the secret knowledge, we will have power and control over what seems like, especially today, a loss of control. And really, it's not that we've lost control at any given time in our history, even now or back then, 100 years ago, but that we were never in control to begin with. And people, I think, are generally uncomfortable with not knowing, with being feeling like they're out of control. But I think that is exactly sort of the root of this, is not so much that we, I mean, maybe as you say, some people want to be like God, but in the sense that we just want to feel like we are in control. We just want to have this particular kind of knowledge, this innate curiosity. And it brings up an interesting point, because you think about the fall into sin. Eve was just curious, right? There's nothing wrong with being curious, but it was a curiosity that went beyond the bounds of what God had prescribed. And that's what we're dealing with this.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, because it is a curiosity, and it has taken many people much further than they ever anticipated to go. And and for some, it's cost them much more than they ever expected to pay.
Right. And I was, you know, the history that you have on the profile, and some articles that I read, the families that were involved in this, there were just problems galore. I mean, they were, the gentleman, the initial investor, Fold, and his fall off the building, the factory.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird. And some of the families that were split apart because of this thing. And it's really, there's more going on here than monopoly money or just dice rolling.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, the Ouija board as a whole has a really interesting history. And I mean, even down to the name. So the name of the Ouija board comes from a combination of the French and German word for yes. So it's the French word for yes and the German word for yes, and it's just squeezed there together. It's, in fact, even that has a really interesting story, because there's a fellow by the name of Charles Kennard who said that he got the name because the board spelled out the letters O-U-I-J-A. When he asked what it meant, the board told him it meant good luck. Well, okay, now, I mean, obviously we have a compound, we have a name that has, you know, two... you know, it's words from two different languages that they both mean yes. But there's other folks who came out and said, well, no, it's closer to an Egyptian word that means good luck. And that's, and so that kind of backing up Kennard's story a little bit. Either way, no historian accepts what Kennard is saying. So it's really just understood to be this combination of a French and German word. And I mean, who's to even say, you know, how this moves forward? But the Ouija board has actually some really ancient origins. In fact, some people think, oh well, it's only been around for, you know, it's only been around like, you know, maybe 150, 200 years, something like that. Maybe like somewhere in the 1800s, and then you know, it was invented here in America. Which, by the way, could probably be a very American thing for us to think, is that we've invented everything. But it was actually used in the days of Pythagoras around about 540 BC. And, you know, again, the roots here are controversial, because there's not a single person or culture that can stake claim to the fact that the Ouija board is them. It comes from them. Mm. So... it's interesting, though, to just look back into history, because we see examples. It may not look like today's Ouija board, but, you know, we see examples of this all the way back from, you know, in China before the birth of Confucius. He lived between 551 and 479 BC. It was a commonplace activity for people to be able to use a board similar to this to try to gain communication with the spirit world or with those who had deceased.
Hmm.
I mean, even in Rome, 3rd century AD, In one very famous case, there were three experimenters who predicted the name of the person who would succeed the reigning emperor. They were tried for treason, and there was a soldier. The guy's name was Theodosius, I believe. I may be pronouncing that wrong.
Who knows with Roman names?
Yeah. So it sounds almost a little bit Greek, though. So the soldier was named by the board. All the soldiers that were named by the board were executed. So this is just interesting stuff. I mean, even here in North America, before Columbus's arrival, you had Native Americans use instruments that they called a squatolat, which I'm probably mispronouncing that as well. That was not, it's. Let me tell you this. It's spelled.
We'll
forgive
you for
that.
Let me
see if I remember spelling. It's spelled squdilatc, and that is the correct spelling. So it had symbols instead of alphabet letters on it. And it also transmitted information as to when and how certain religious ceremonies should be performed. So not only were they communicating with the dead, but they were also receiving religious instruction from this as well.
Mm.
Now, an interesting turn is what happened in 1853. You had a man in France. He was a spiritualist, and his last name was Planchet. And so he invented this instrument really similar to the one that the Parker brothers now manufacture. And the instrument had a small heart-shaped platform that rested on three legs, one of which one end held a pencil. And this was called a planchette. And so what would happen is when the planchette moved, the pencil wrote coherent messages. And so the use of this instrument became a fad throughout France and the empire as a whole. And this was later adopted as part of what we think of as the modern day Ouija board. So with the Ouija board, almost everything is controversial. And I think
there's a lot of urban legend to it.
Yes. And so, you know, now when you start talking about the planchette, you know, this is a practice. Now, whether it's a person or not, that is debatable. But the fact that this activity is going on,
gotcha,
with this heart-shaped item that's doing automatic writings or...
Yeah, I was going to say it's a form of automatic writing where you let the spirit guide your hand and write as this spirit guide is guiding you. It's very similar to that as well.
Yeah. So that is undeniable because this has been going on for hundreds of years.
Centuries.
And then the planchette's role in the Ouija board is something that we would think of maybe as possibly being a little bit more modern. But to be honest, we just don't know everything there is to know about these talking boards, which is another name for it. Or sometimes people call them spirit boards. Basically, almost think back to the Native Americans where they're using these symbols. The idea is the same. You know, we have some kind of arbitrary system for communication. We've assigned meanings to certain things. In our case, it's letters in a thing that we call an alphabet. For the Native Americans, it was symbols that represented something. And then when you would, you know, invoke the spirit world, they would be able to communicate to you in a way that you could understand.
Yeah. It reminds me, in a way, I know this is a little sidetracked, but it reminds me in a way that, you know, we have this sophisticated technology that we use to try to contact extraterrestrials in hopes of delivering ourselves from our own problems. If we find some advanced civilization with our high-tech listening devices and signaling devices, that maybe these high-tech aliens will come and save us from ourselves.
Yeah.
Again, it seems like that same kind of spirit in which we are looking outside of ourselves for answers and for closure or for control or whatever we want to know, we got to know, we have to know. And it's this insatiable lust is the best word I can come up with for knowledge. where there's nothing wrong with being curious about things, but there is really what we're talking about here is a level of appropriate curiosity and the ultimate desire of why is it that you want to know? What's the point of your desire to know? What is this? Why did Eve want to know? The Bible says, right? It looked good. It seemed to make one wise. It was a delight to the eyes. And so why not? But she transgressed what the boundaries that God had established for.
What's the old saying? Curiosity killed the cat.
Yes. And so curiosity in this case, it's not good.
No, it's not. And I think we really see that played out as this thing hits America. And whenever we look at this issue, it's generally thought of, you know, say, okay, well, how did the board get to America? Well, most people believe that William Fold in 1892 was the inventor of the Ouija board, but even that's been a little bit murkied. It shouldn't surprise us that something like the Ouija board would have such a complicated history to it. But here's the interesting thing. Earlier, a year earlier, so in 1891, there was a U.S. patent issued to Elijah J. Bond as the inventor of the Ouija board. So according to a story that appeared in American Heritage magazine in April of 1983, Fold bought the rights from Bond in 1892 and filed for another patent. Fold then announced that he had founded the Southern Novelty Company in Baltimore, Maryland. Now, he later, this business became to be known as the Baltimore Talking Board Company and produced the Oriole Talking Board. So this is kind of like what you could think of as what's the first Ouija board in America? It was the Oriole Talking Board.
Now, and it was produced by a company that we would probably equate to Toys R Us.
Yeah, it's just a novelty company. Mm-hmm. They're just putting out, I would just imagine the different items that this company would put out. Now, what's most interesting, I think, about William Fold is that he didn't claim to be a spiritualist. He wasn't involved in some kind of occultic activity. He was a Presbyterian.
That's what he said. I'm a Presbyterian,
it's what he
not
said.
A spiritualist.
Of course, my thought is why would any good Presbyterian be messing with some kind of occultic tool to?
He didn't know Westminster very well. He didn't know the Confessions. He was a lapsed Presbyterian, perhaps. Well, it's interesting that one of the marketing geniuses, I think it began with once the patent was issued in 1892. That the manufacturers, when they started making these things in mass, they didn't tell people how they worked. I mean, I don't think they knew, really. But at the same time, that mystery of, well, we don't know how it works, we just know that it does.
Yeah.
And that intrigue is really what sort of launched the success. So you couple this with, that's a curiosity, right? I want to know. More curiosity here. How does this work? I want to test it for myself. I just want to see for myself what this is. And so there's this curiosity. You want to contact your dead relatives, and you just want to see how this board works. And my gosh, I can only get it for a couple of dollars. And why not? Let's give it a try, honey. We can order some food. Well, they didn't order pizza back then, but family game night, right? Let's contact
Fred. Yeah, it's just having fun.
Yeah, it's no big deal. And yet it becomes, and I think the thing is, as you've said, this thing is really the root of it. The core of it is this ancient practice of necromancy. And communicating with spirits and the dead. And that's really what's underlying this whole thing.
Yeah. So William Fold, he's able to buy this off Elijah Bond, which, by the way, I need to throw this in here. Charles Kennard, and I mentioned him earlier, he's actually the one to whom we credit the design of the Ouija board that we have here in America.
Yeah.
And
right.
So Bond gets credit for inventing it because he was the first one who got the patent, but William Fold is the one who really brought it to market, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And so that's why it kind of looks like it comes from the 1890s, because it did.
Yeah, absolutely. And so yeah. The popularity, though, you say, okay, well, how did Fold? So, I mean, did he go on a mass campaign? Well, no, it was World War One, and then. Hmm. You had thousands of stateside civilians who wanted to keep in touch with their sons, their husbands, their loved ones who were fighting over in Europe. They wanted to know their well-being. So In this case, they realize they're not even trying to talk to the dead. They're just wanting that hidden knowledge of how their loved one, who is on the other side of the pond, as some may say, how their well-being is.
I was reading an article by a gentleman who had done as much research on this on the Ouija board, Robert Murch. I think you maybe have run across him when you were doing yours. But Murch had said, during the course of his research about the board, he said, quote, this was from a Smithsonian article written in 2016. He says, quote, "For such an iconic thing that strikes both fear and wonder in American culture," speaking of the Ouija board, "how can no one know where it came from?" That's really something, right? It's like, what the heck? How come nobody knows about this? Why is this so shrouded in mystery? And, you know, it's interesting. That quote made me think about how, you know, Antichrist ideas make inroads into the church, because you lose sight of the meandering course of the historical development of these ideas that are suddenly present before you. Absolutely. It all of a sudden seems novel or new or exciting or different, but nobody can trace its history. It's almost like there was a deliberate attempt to cover up the past in order to present this as something new.
Well, yeah, and why would Satan want this published in such a way that people would know it was from him, and right. that this is something he's using to deceive and destroy the lives of others?
Mm-hmm.
And this is exactly what we see taking place in the midst of World War One. In fact, there was an article that was published by the New York Tribune on December 24th, 1919, and it said this, and this is referring to the University of Michigan. This is what it said: "The mysterious talking oracle has succeeded the Bible and the prayer book in fraternity houses and students' rooms."
Mm.
It slides right on in. And If we think that there's a shortcut to learning something or to knowing something or discovering something, we as a people generally want to take it. The New York Times Magazine assaulted the Ouija board and described it as, and I quote, "the Bolshevik of the psychic realm." The Baltimore Sun hired a full-time editor whose sole duty was to answer Ouija-related questions.
Wow.
And so this thing's just taking off. And, of course, you know, the best advertisement's word of mouth. You know, I mean, I might go to a store, but Dan, if you tell me that the store's great and they have good prices, I'm exponentially more likely to go in lieu of your recommendation. Well, it's the same thing is true with the Ouija board. People just start going after it.
Yeah, right. And that really is, I mean, this is what we see in our culture today. I mean, we are maybe not quite as bad as World War One or the Spanish flu or Civil War. I mean, I think everybody's complaining about 2020, but 1920 wasn't that great. 1865 wasn't that great. The kind of exponential loss. I mean, 600,000 people. I think 600,000 men died in the Civil War. Hundreds of thousands in World War One. And so, you know, I know the pandemic in our time has claimed lives. But then you had Civil War. Then you had World War One. Just when you thought you were done with war, World War One comes along, and then you have the Spanish flu.
Yeah.
Which and so, you know, 2020 is by comparison. I know there's death and suffering and everything in isolation, but we're still in a situation where we are feeling that loss of control again.
Yeah.
But as I think it was C.S. Lewis, when he gave a lecture called Learning in Wartime in 1931 or 1939, shortly after Hitler invaded Poland, Lewis is like, you know, it's not that things are out of control. This is the way it's always been. There's never been a normal. We've just kept it on the back burner. right? To paraphrase him, that we live in a time of uncertainty, certainly, but that uncertainty drives us to seek out forms of solace and knowledge and certain, you know, certain ways in which we can guard and protect ourselves. And it really does boil down to when life does become clearly uncertain and you feel like you're out of control, where do you turn? And that's why this was so, it was easy, it was quick, it was, you know, fun maybe, you were a little curious, but it was turning people away from God under the guise of thinking that, well, this is no big deal. I think the Guardian article that I read talked about how people could have a seance on Saturday night and not have any problem going to church on Sunday the next day.
Well, and you've hit it, because that uncertainty drives us, and it was really the Civil War that paved the way for the Ouija board. And not the Civil War or any of the things behind it specifically, but the fact that there were men fighting and dying, because what happens is during this period is seances become extremely popular.
Right.
Well, why? Because, right. Well, Dad died in the Civil War, or our son, or our brother, or whoever. And so now all of a sudden you have the upper class people are having seances in their parlor. In fact, that's where we get the term parlor trick from.
Yeah. And Lincoln's wife held a seance for their son. And so it's hard to understand just how widespread a phenomena this parlor seance things were happening at this time. But this is the culture in which this board takes off.
But as important as that was to the talking board, or what we know of today as the Ouija board, as important as that was, that is not even the most significant event that has changed the life of the Ouija board here in the United States.
Okay, I think you're going to tell us why.
This episode of Apologetics Profile has been a production of Watchman Fellowship Incorporated, Arlington, Texas. For more information on this and any of our other podcast episodes or resources, visit watchman.org today.